broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory on the University of British Columbia campus in Vancouver. Hello and welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and today we are joined by Leslie Shore. She is a communications expert, and she's the owner of the consultancy Listen to Succeed. She's a return guest. We spoke about her book a few months ago, which is fantastic. And Leslie has worked with corporations, nonprofits, entrepreneurs, health professionals, and educational institutions to up-level their intrapersonal and interpersonal communication skills, which are super important these days. And her book, Listen to Succeed, How to Identify and Overcome Barriers to Effective Listening, is currently used in four different universities and in businesses and nonprofits throughout the U.S. and Canada. And before we bring Leslie onto the show, I'd just like to start off with an intention for today. So if you're in a safe place to do so, feel free to close your eyes. And if not, keep them open. If you're able to do so, you can put your hand right over your heart and just take in a deep breath. And just focus on the sensations that you feel in your heart and your chest as you breathe in and out. Now sending love to yourself. Feel that love emanating from your heart in the center of your chest there. Continuing to breathe and feel that energy of love, and just allow it to grow a little bit more every time you breathe in. And notice what it feels like. Notice the sensation, if it's a warm feeling or a tingling, whatever it feels for you, just be present to that. And allow it to expand as much as feels good to you, whether that's outside of your body, across the city or town where you live, the whole planet, or even if it's just sending extra love to your own heart today, if that's what you need. And so for today, the intention, we're going to be talking about how to de-escalate an argument, how to communicate more effectively. And may we all just connect in this circle, no matter what the time or place that we're watching or listening to this. And just join together in our intention for better communication between all of humanity. And may the people who most need to hear this and who are ready and receptive to this information, may it gently and lovingly find them. And so it is. Hi, Leslie.
Hi.
Hi, welcome to the show. That was a bit longer than I was intending, but I hope that's okay.
Nothing wrong with that. It got me centered.
Oh, good, good. I'm glad. So the last time you were on the show, we were talking about your book, Listen to Succeed. And today the intention was to talk about how to de-escalate an argument. So I'm just curious where that intention came from. Is this something that you're focusing on lately or in a program you're developing?
Well, the whole idea behind de-escalation is what causes conflicts, whether it's countries, couples, parents and kids, is that there's a lack of understanding of what it is that goes into how a conversation escalates. And because there's that lack of understanding, trying to fill in that gap will, whether it's personally, corporately, governmentally, will help folks realize the pitfalls and kind of start thinking through how they're going to say something, and even sometimes why they're escalating, which is at this particular point invisible to them.
All right. I know how quickly arguments can escalate. You're just having a conversation and all of a sudden someone says something, or there's a look on their face, a tone, something in their body language that sets the other person off. And then it's just, it's like a train without brakes.
It is so true. Part of the issue, I think, is that it is invisible. And that folks do not understand the power of their words. And it's impossible for people to understand what words make us see red, what words make us angry, what words bring us back to a time either in our childhood or adulthood that is very negatively tinged with emotion. And they have no clue. But if they're looking at your body language and seeing how something lands, that's the first key. If they see that something is landing in you so that your body language changes, then that is a key to that person to actually be able to say, wow, did I say something that hit you wrong? And just by saying that, that absolutely takes the air out of the escalation, because the person doesn't have to escalate because someone has noticed that whatever it is that they said or how they said it has hit them wrong.
That's interesting, because that would be a great way to handle it, is if I say something and I see a reaction in you, that I would be the one to respond and try to de-escalate and calm things down. But I have a friend who specifically goes out of his way to use trigger words that, I mean, we all have our own trigger memories and things, but these are words that mass groups of people would find offensive. And he'll go out of his way to use them in a way that sparks that controversy that is intended to trigger. And then he'll say, oh, well, you should just get over it, because the way I define this word is not so negative. Very negative words that I probably shouldn't even repeat. You know, misogynistic type of language. And I just wonder how to deal with that, because I'll speak up and say, hey, that's bothering me. And I imagine it would bother a lot of other people. And then we end up in this fight about whether he should use that word around me. So how do you deal with a person who's clearly not on board with that de-escalating the conversation?
I think that's such a great question, Marie, because there are people who will do that on purpose. They will use a trigger word on purpose. And that tells you something about that person and whether he cares or not, in terms of the conversation being a civil learning conversation, or what he's trying to do is be in control and create an escalation situation. And if you are very transparent and you say, hey, that word bothers me, and I wouldn't doubt that it would bother 95% of the people that you use it in front of, in my presence, I am asking for you not to use that word. And if he says, no, I'm going to use it, then you're able to come back and say, well, that means that you do not respect my wishes. And therefore, if you use it again, I have the capability of saying the conversation's over, because you've decided to use it despite what I have asked. That kind of honesty is hard to come by, but boy, oh boy, it puts people back on their heels to realize that, wait a second, I can't get away with that with Marie. Good. Maybe he will start learning that this is something that is not in his best interests, that gaining control in that way, which is probably what he's trying to do, now has a situation where people are wise to it and they're not going to put up with it anymore.
So I can imagine, Leslie, as you're explaining that, I mean, it sounds great, obviously a clear opportunity to set a boundary. And yet there is that control mechanism where it'll get into, well, my definition of this is not misogynistic and your interpret, and then it gets into, rather than talking about the issue of please respect my wishes and don't use words like that, it gets into me having to defend why I have a right to ask him not to use, you know what I mean? So I allow the conversation, I allow him to steer the conversation into a way where I continue to get escalated and then he has control, rather than me saying, that's not okay, you can have your opinion and this conversation is over if you don't like it.
Well, I understand exactly what you're saying, because when he comes up against someone like you who's very honest and says, that is not okay with me, and he now begins to branch off into a conversation that, well, why isn't it okay with you, and leaving the original conversation that you are dealing with, it's kind of like, you know something? I really don't think, can I call him Bob? I'm just going to
call
him
Bob.
Okay, Bob, I think what's happening here is that you're not understanding that by continuing to use that word, you are being dishonorable to my wishes. I'm not asking all that much. I'm just asking you to change the word that you're using. And if you do not want to, that's fine. We can stop a conversation right here. And then stick to it. And I know that's tough, but what Bob is doing is being a bully. Hmm. This conversation will be held on his terms, period. That is not fair, because a conversation is a two-way street. And both sides really have their boundaries and their dignity. And all of that is involved when you're having a conversation. And if someone will not change what they are doing, just a word that they're using, to allow you to keep your dignity, your honor, your thoughtfulness, your whatever it might be, then there's an issue with that person. And Bob may not be someone that you'll be conversing with very often, because he's not going to get out of you what he's looking for, which is control. And you don't have to be in that position.
Thank you, Leslie. That's really helpful. And I'm just curious for yourself, because I feel like I've had the conversation, but not quite as effectively as you as you say it, because I do, once I get that pushback, that's when the escalation starts. Like I notice the tension and the ooh, and then I make a request, and then when it's returned with challenge rather than respect or compassion, then I tend to escalate. And so I'm just wondering, in your own life, how many times you might attempt that conversation before you just stop returning phone calls or pass on invitations? Where might you draw the line?
It's a great question, because it's the level of honesty that you're showing towards that person that is the issue at this particular point. If your level of honesty is such that you are saying, you are disrespecting me, I don't understand why you continue to want to use that word, given that I've asked you not to, is this relationship important to you? And if Bob comes back and says, yes, it is, then you have absolutely the right to say, if it is important to you, then my request in terms of you're not using that word is something that I have to set a boundary with. If you continue to use that word, then to be perfectly honest with you, I can't engage with you, because no longer is it a civil conversation between two people that are trying to learn from each other, enrich their lives. I can tell you, Marie, that very few people have hit me in such a way that I have had to literally kind of fade out of the picture, because I know that what they are doing is sucking my energy, getting their needs met at my expense, because as we all know, when you're escalating from discussion to argument to fight, that's a lot of energy. That's a lot of negative energy. And I'm sorry, but that's not the way I live my life. And if there's a person who is trying to make that the cornerstone of conversation with me, I don't need them in my life. So I just let them slide.
Thank you, Leslie. That's really helpful. And I'm sure that it's going to be helpful for a lot of people, because I know that I'm not the only person that has people who, like, I enjoy having a debate type discussion when it's with the purpose of understanding each other's viewpoints.
Yes, but there's a big difference between discussion and debate and an argument and a fight. Discussion and debate, people do not use negatively tinged adjective trigger words and absolute words in order to make their point. When you're in a discussion or a debate, you're putting out your facts and your opinions, and it could be in a very assertive way, but it's not an emotional way that if you don't believe what I'm saying, you're wrong. That's not what it is. It's putting it out there so that the other person can come back, if they're listening well, can say, oh, you know, I really hadn't thought of it from that perspective. Tell me more about X. And then what happens is this back and forth of continuing, of educating each other. That's what discussion is. That's what debate is. But what brings it to the next level is that what happens is being right is more important than anything else. That's when it turns into an argument or a fight. Keep the being right out of the equation, and you will not be escalating.
Awesome. Do you have any quick tips on, I don't know, like a breath exercise or a mantra or something, that, because I know when I'm faced with someone who needs to be right, that's exactly what triggers my need to be right, right? I've got to defend my position, even if 30 seconds ago I was just wanting to love the person. So how do you calm yourself down so that you don't react in the same way or initiate that exchange because you've been triggered?
So it's very interesting that our body physiologically reacts to these trigger words. Whether it's the hair standing up on the back of your neck, you get flushed, you get warm, or your body language changes, your body actually will give you a symptom of the fact that you have been triggered. One of the most important things when we talk about this is recognize your symptoms. Recognize what happens to you physiologically when this begins to happen. And if you can do so, then you're able to literally say to yourself, I'm being triggered. Because usually if you can say that to yourself, you can step back. And one of the things that I have taught so many people, and it comes from my retail days, if you can believe that, Marie, I learned a very important lesson in retail, and it was Christmas time, and this gal was going off like crazy, saying, how come you don't have this bestseller? It's the day before Christmas. We do 1.5 million out of that store. Are we going to be out of a few bestsellers? Yes. And she was so just, she was out there. And I looked at her and I realized I had to break the energy, and I stepped back, literally took a step back and allowed myself to breathe and put my hands in front of my face and took it down through my body and out, kind of take that energy and push it away. What that allowed me to do was realize that I was about to be triggered, I would not be triggered because I will never allow myself to go where they're going. That is something that, to me, a person's dignity is extremely important. And so I make sure that I'm in charge of who I am so that I don't bounce back in the same way that they're coming at me. I will smile and I will say, would you like to rephrase that? With a smile. And it stops them because sometimes they don't realize where they've gone. That's part of what I consider a way to realize what's happening, a way to physically allow yourself that breath and that space so that you don't engage with the engager.
So that's interesting, Leslie, the breath and then asking, would you like to rephrase that? I can see how that could be really effective in some situations. And then other people, I mean, sometimes, and this is probably a judgment, but my observation, and it's not just other people, I've done this too. Sometimes we just want to be mad. And it doesn't matter how effectively the other person handles it. That might even just make us more mad. Why are you being condescending to me? Or how dare you talk to me in that tone and not cower in fear? So I'm just wondering if you ever have had that kind of situation where when you've calmed yourself down and addressed it in a neutral way with an invitation for them to rephrase it, does it always turn out well for you?
No, it doesn't. Okay. And I love for it to, but there are, I don't know if you've heard in transactional analysis of parent, adult, child. And these are tapes that our brains are in. And where we want to be is in the adult tape, rational, reasonable, and respectful. Wouldn't that be nice if we were there 100% of the time? But there are two other tapes. One is the parent tape. And those who have been parented or are parented knows what it's like when the hands go on the hips and the finger comes out and starts wagging. And things like, I brought you into this world, I can take you out of this world. That situation when you're in the parent tape is that they want to keep control. That's an important thing. Then there's the child tape where they whine and they have tantrums and everything they say is trying to get control. And so when people come at you with these issues that can escalate quickly, they're never an adult. They are in parent or child. So if it's a question of trying to keep control, they're in parent. If they're trying to gain any kind of control, they're in child. So knowing that, if you can stay an adult, you can go, I know what's going on. I refuse to go to parent. I refuse to go to child. I'm staying at adult. And sometimes, Marie, what that means is that we have to say, and this is what a timeout is for. A timeout. And my parents used to use it. The timeout is for, you know something? We're not going to get anywhere quickly with this. I think we need to take 5 minutes, go somewhere else, and then come back and revisit it. My parents did that, and they were not arguers because they were very good communicators. But if they needed to do a timeout, usually when they came back together, they were laughing because they realized what they were having this escalation over was so minuscule compared to the reality of what the world is really about and how important their relationship was. At 54 years of marriage, they knew how to take care of situations that were escalating.
How wonderful that you grew up in a home like that, and now you're able to help all the rest of us who didn't have that upbringing.
Well, you know, it's so interesting. Thank you. And yes, I am so lucky. And one of the things that I realized and in conversations with my parents before they passed was that one of the reasons that their communication and marriage was so good was that they realized very early on that you know, when you're courting and when you're in the first years of marriage, before the kids come, you're finding out so much about each other, and there's nothing too small, nothing too minuscule that you won't talk about, find out about each other, and then life happens. And what happens is with kids and the parents who now are grandparents, and they have their own needs and work and all that kind of stuff, what tends to happen is the communication that was so awesome at the beginning of the relationship has now taken a back seat. And what my folks told me and my two brothers about was, you've got to work equally as hard on the relationship with your spouse as you do with your kids. As the kids are growing, your relationship should be growing. So they always took the time to debrief with each other, even if it was just 15 minutes by themselves, to connect, to make sure that there was nothing underneath it they had to deal with. And that was something that we as kids took on as we came out into the world, and not just with spousal relationships, but with friendships, with people at work. The debriefing aspect is so important to make sure that the communication dynamic that you have set up is still really working and is humming along beautifully.
Awesome. Well, there's so many talking points that we have, so many directions we could take. I'm just wondering, what do you think is the most important point that you want to talk about next?
Well, I touched on it earlier, and I don't think I can say it enough. And that is, when we're talking about communication and discussions becoming arguments, the major point is that somewhere, someone has decided that they need to win. And the issue there is that if winning is more important than the relationship, there's a problem. However, part of the issue is that people sometimes don't know that that's what they're doing. And that's where the communication dynamic comes in, of kind of a, hey, honey, if I start doing this, would you call me on it? Would you say, is it important for you to win, or is solving the issue and our relationship staying healthy, is that more important? And one of the things that I've dealt with in terms of parents that are divorcing or have divorced is that's a situation that is ripe for a lot of conflict. And one of the things that I tell them, and it usually stops them in their tracks, and that is, what is most important here is the health of your children, the psychological and emotional health of your children. Do you agree? Yes. Okay. Then neither of you are going to win this argument. You have to do resolution that is appropriate for your kids. That's your aim. That's where you need to go. Neither of you can stand here and say, I win, you lose. Because if you do that, the kids lose. And they figure out pretty quickly that that is really, really true. What is important? Is the relationship is important? Is the kid, are the kids important? Is solving the issue at hand more important than winning? It's pretty invisible. And I think people have grown up that way in families and don't realize it. And it's something that the moment they do realize it, it falls away. That's something that comes up in their head. Oh, I'm trying to win. Wait a second. What is it that I really want to do here?
Interesting. And I can imagine, especially in divorces, that a lot of times there's one person who wants to feel like that other person is the bad guy, that you know, I've been hurt by this person, that person, I've never done anything to hurt that person. They're the one, they're the aggressor, I'm the victim. And therefore, they need to be wrong so that I can be good. They're bad, so I'm good. And that's just lose-lose for everybody.
It's a lose-lose. Even if you have no kids, that's a lose-lose. And then if you add kids, it makes it even worse. And I know people close to me who have divorced, and some of them have done it beautifully, and some of them have not. And the ones who have not done it well in terms of communication and being able to handle conflict, those who haven't been able to do it well are more unhappy than when they were in the marriage. And isn't that how do you do?
Well, and I also want to validate, though, that we can still, no matter how much we would like it to be win-win for everyone and we'd like it to be healthy, we can't make that other person get on board with not winning. But we can get on board with ourselves not putting, being in that position of, I need to be right.
Yes, yes. And you can do it in such a way, and people do ask me about this, you can do that in such a way that the other person doesn't feel that they can walk all over you. Because you can say things in such a way of saying, you know something, it's important to me that in terms of our custody or whatever the case is, that when we do the handoff, this part is very important to me. Now, anything else that we want to talk about, I'm willing to really talk about it and have that kind of a conversation. But as long as this is handled and the kids see us being able to work together at that handoff, I think everything else will work. And you're setting a boundary. And if they accept that boundary, then in actuality, it will work better, even if the other person seems to be, quote unquote, getting more of what they want. What you're looking out for is the emotional and psychological health of your kids.
Thanks, Leslie. That actually reminded me of a situation I had in an employment situation where the manager would come into the room and start talking negatively to people, singling them out, humiliating people. And she used an angry tone of voice with me one time, and I privately went up to her and I said, is there something that I did that upset you? Because I noticed you seem angry or distressed or something. And as soon as I said that, she actually stopped for a moment and was like, oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm just having a really hard day. But it was, if I had tolerated that, then I would have become one of the people that she mistreated. And instead, she knew I wasn't going to put up with that. And it was just very gentle. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a confrontation.
And Marie, you did that perfectly. And the reason I say that is it wasn't confrontational. You were asking her a question, not making a statement. You were asking a question. But the other thing that I think in that illustration that you just gave is, and this is something that I tell folks all the time, you teach people how to treat you. And you didn't let her get away with it. So she learned very quickly that she couldn't do that. The other folks who were putting up with it, she's sitting back and going, well, I can do that. There's going to be no pushback. So those other folks are teaching her that it's okay to treat them that way. And one of the most important things, especially in an employment situation, is you have to have your own boundaries around your dignity and how people respect you. And when people go over those boundaries, just as you did, you can ask the question, hey, is there something that I did that upset you? Or I noticed you're a little bit brusque today. That's something that I'm not used to coming from you, which is your way of saying, hey, don't do that again. But the point is you're giving them an out, and they know that this is not acceptable to you. You set your boundaries, but it's important to know what they are even before you get into that situation.
And Leslie, thank you so much for that. And I'm wondering also, I think the difference between the reason I was able to handle that the way I did and the people who were putting up with it was I had taken on that job to save up for a trip to Los Angeles. My rent was going to be paid even if I got fired for speaking up. So I wasn't in a position where I needed that money. I wanted it. I wanted to go on the trip, but I wasn't going to lose any safety or stability if I had to walk out the door. So what if you're in a position where you are reliant on that money and you can't go for 2 weeks or 2 months without a paycheck?
Well, that's why I'm saying from the very beginning, your boundaries have to be good. And it's in the way you frame the issue to the person that's the problem. Because one of the things is, and we all know, that if we're in a job that we hate because our manager is kind of like your manager was, that they didn't care, they were negative, they were aggressive, whatever the case might be, when you first get into a job, one of the most important things is to tell people who you are. And the way you do that is through your own behavior and how you handle others' behavior when they cross a boundary. Being nice and being able to say, and I know what you mean about I can't have this job go out from under me. I'd like to take it from two points of view. One, if you handle it right up front, the probability is that they'll stop doing it with you because at the very beginning of your working there, you have said, this is a boundary that is really tough for me to deal with. So I'm just kind of letting you know. The other thing is that bad manager is causing turnover for that company, period. Because every single time, you know, they say it and the statistics prove it. People do not quit jobs. They quit managers. And the best way of having a manager, and I did this once when I was in retail. I had a manager at the Mall of America in one of the stores that I was a district manager for. And he was a good manager, but I noticed that he really was going through a lot of people. And one day I went up there when he wasn't there, and the folks told me that the way he talked to them when he was telling them what they needed to do letting them know what had to go on, he was being brusque, and he was not being, it wasn't that he wasn't being kind. He didn't know how to frame questions or even put his request into a question. I sat down and I told him, I gave him a tool, which I won't go into now, but what happened was within a month, his force had completely stabilized. I came in on another mystery visit and they said, I don't know what you did with him, but he's absolutely a pleasure to work with now. He's asking us questions. He's bringing us in on stuff and blah, 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 and went on and on and on. They had the best Christmas they had ever had in that store. It was invisible to him, and he didn't know that's what was happening. So when I brought it to his attention and gave him a tool, he was able to completely switch 180. And I think a lot of people have their way of communicating that comes out what worked for them to survive childhood. And what's important for folks to know is that sometimes all it takes is a very kind word, a kind conversation, to let them know how they're being perceived or what they're saying, how it's being received. And a look of horror on their face will tell you, oh my gosh, I didn't know. And some people, as you say, in terms of the people who can't afford to lose the job, some people will take the chance and some won't, and that's okay.
Thank you, Leslie. And now I'm curious what you said to him and what this tool was, this magical.
Okay. So the tool is called Story. And what I want you to envision is two circles that are overlapping a little bit so that you've got kind of that elongated thing in the middle. And on one side, it says what happened, the actual fact of what happened. And on the other side, what you made it mean. And in the middle where they overlap is where it gets really messy. So I'll give you an example. Back in the days when I was in retail, I had a territory manager who wasn't the best with communication. And he said to me, after going through three of my stores, they were clean, received up to date. My managers had been in place for a long time. And he said, Leslie, you're a lousy merchandiser. Exactly. I see the look on your face. So the fact is that he said, you're a lousy merchandiser. Here's what I made it mean. Oh boy, even though these store visits have gone great, he thinks I'm a lousy merchandiser. I'll probably end up on probation. You know what happens in our brain, right? And then you go further and further down and it's like, I'm going to get fired. So you took this, you're a lousy merchandiser, and what you made it mean was a whole bunch more. So what happened when I explained that to him, and the fact that we actually put those two together and we make it one, it's very hard to tease out the real fact. And what I did finally was realize, wow, this is what he said. Here's the problem with what he said that caused me to react like that. That word lousy, wow, that's negative, and you attach all kinds of things to it. What could he have said? And this is what I taught him. Figure out what's really going on, and then do the praise sandwich. My territory manager could have said, Leslie, I keep on seeing the same managers. You've got stable crews. Your loss prevention is the best in the territory. Your stores are clean. Here's one place that I think you can use some help and training in. Your merchandising isn't really up to the standards that we want it. But I also need to tell you, you are such a quick learner that I know if I bring another district manager up to train you, you'll do great. I think that's better than you're a lousy merchandiser.
Yeah. So Leslie, it sounds, I mean, I'm wondering, did you go to him and say, when you say I'm a lousy merchandiser, I feel afraid that I'm going to lose my job, which makes it harder to do a good job?
No. This particular guy, first of all, I wasn't as wise then as I am now. In between then and now, I've got a master's degree and a book and that kind of stuff. But what really made me understand, because this particular gentleman, and I use that word loosely, this particular gentleman did have a way of using negative words and tone of voice to keep absolute control, because that was what was necessary in his life. He lost a lot of district managers because people wouldn't put up with it, and eventually me included. I did not have the wisdom or the understanding at that point about what was going on for me to buck up and do the things that I'm suggesting now. I think, though, that very early on, had I had the wisdom, I would have made suggestions or asked him to rephrase, but I would, again, have had to have done it at the very beginning of my supervisor-employee relationship, and that really is key. And I'm not saying, Marie, you and I both know, it doesn't work every time, We don't think of working with it every time. Sometimes it's not really important to deal with it every time. After all, he came 4 times a year. If you're working with someone every day, that's one thing. 4 times a year, maybe you can step back and handle it, and you're going to be okay. Situational sometimes.
I love that you're clarifying that it's really the importance of, you know, what kind of effect it's going to have on you, the importance of the relationship, the job, whatever it may be, and then you weigh the pros and cons of whether it's worth saying something. And it also sounds like, I mean, it's the same with relationships. So many people complain that, you know, a year into the relationship, that's when the person starts saying, well, I don't like it when you talk to me like this, or I don't like this, and asking for all these changes because they've been putting up with all these little things that the other person had no idea were a problem, because you wanted to make a good impression, you wanted to be keep the peace.
And here's a suggestion I have, and this is something that everyone I've told this about has just done it, and it's made a difference for them. And that is literally to create that list of 10 words or phrases or situations that make you see red. When it came about? Was it age 14? Was it age 8? Was it at 21 with a professor or a boss? What is it? When did it come about? And what was the situation? And when you do this, and it can be longer than 10, when you do this, first of all, it helps you clarify why it's triggering you. But then you switch your paper with your spouse or your boyfriend or your girlfriend or whatever. And the look on their faces is, oh my gosh, I never knew. I never understood. I didn't understand that it was rooted so far back. I didn't realize blah, blah, blah. And the moment the I didn't realize comes together with the reality of, wow, if I do that again, I know what I'm doing, and therefore I'm not going to do it again. That's something that really helps a relationship actually grow out of the conflict instead of disintegrate because of the conflict.
Oh, I love that. That's so juicy. Thank you, Leslie. We're speaking with Leslie Shore. She's a communications expert. She is the author of Listen to Succeed, How to Identify and Overcome Barriers to Effective Listening. You can go to her website, listentosucceed.com, if you want more information. If you're watching this on YouTube, I'll also post a link to her website in the description below. But look her up, Google Listen to Succeed if you're listening on the radio, and you should be able to find her no problem. And Leslie, there's so many things. We've got the phrases that make arguments worse. There's so much more to this topic, and I imagine people can get more training from your website. But what do you think is the most important thing that you want to end the show with?
It comes down to two things. Can you get your ego out of the way? Can you realize that what is important is solving the issue and keeping the relationship, or is it more important to you to win? If you can answer that question, can you keep your ego out of the way? Yes. Is the issue more important and the relationship more important than winning? Yes. If you can answer yes to those two questions, you are on your way to not even having to de-escalate, because you won't even escalate. Listen to your gut. Listen to your heart. You know what is happening when the conversation begins to turn. And it is up to each of us to be able to recognize it, step back, and start thinking about what are the words that I want to use that will keep this a discussion that we can both learn from.
Thanks, Leslie. Well, I'm curious really quickly, if it's possible to do this really quickly. Let's say we're imperfect human beings. We haven't all had the years and decades of communication training and experience that you have had. So let's say we get escalated. We're trying to win. We're fighting. We're full out in an argument. And mm-hmm. we realize, okay, we're in this argument. What did Leslie tell me to do in this situation? What would that be?
Call a timeout on yourself. Because when you are smart and wise enough to realize what the situation is and that you are equally responsible for that situation being escalated, you can say, I'm calling a timeout on myself. I realize that this has gone to a place that neither of us meant it to be. I need to step back. Let's look at this, whether it's in 5 minutes or an hour. But it's so awesome that when you're honest with the other person and say, oh my gosh, what did I do? How did we get here? You can stop immediately and not continue the problem, but actually show the other person that you care enough about the relationship to stop it where it is and come back to it when you realize that you can be in a conversation, in a dialogue, in a discussion, and not in something that's turning into an argument, because nobody really wants to get there. Be honest with yourself. Call yourself out on it. You'll love yourself for it, and they will too.
Thank you, Leslie. And so if I'm understanding you correctly, it sounds like you're saying once you notice that, call a timeout for yourself, say, I need a break. And then that's the time to go away and practice some self-care. Because I know in arguments also, sometimes arguments happen because we're looking for care from the other person and we're not getting quite what we want. And then we keep trying to get that and it's not happening. And then it gets worse and worse. So that's the time to step back and go and practice something for myself to take care of myself and not expect that from my partner or friend.
And that's beautiful, Marie, because if you realize that's what you need is some self-care, then you can actually come back to the discussion and in that honesty go, you know something? I was looking for you to do something for me that really I had to do for myself in terms of self-care. And I realized that when we took the time out and I'm good. But you know what? That plants a seed. That plants a seed in the other person in terms of, oh, when we escalate, and I don't know why Marie is escalating, maybe it's a self-care thing that has to be taken care of. Maybe I should ask her something. All these tiny little seeds will sprout in a good way.
Oh, thank you, Leslie. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you. I love having you on the show. Of course, you're welcome back anytime. We could do a whole series of workshops on de-escalation and communication. I'm sure you've got plenty on your website as well, listentosucceed.com. Is there anything you'd like to say before we close the show?
I honestly would say, first of all, Marie, it's always a pleasure to have these great conversations with you. And one of the things that I think is really most important when we're talking about this particular subject of de-escalation is where you really want to be is not to be at a point where you have to de-escalate. And the best way of doing that is listening effectively to the other person. And the most important things about that is get your ego out of the way, because listening is about them, not about you. And listen without judgment. Hard to do, easy to say, hard to do, but our mind chatter tells us. So if you can work on those two things, your amount of time or the amount of times that you end up escalating will continue to decrease the more muscular you get in terms of keeping your ego out of the way and keeping your judgments off to the side. Hear purely what the person is saying to you.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Again, this has been Leslie Shore on Synchronicity. You can find her at listentosucceed.com. And I just want to put our hands over our hearts again and to close the show, because I know that if you're anything like me, you're thinking about all those times you got it wrong. And we don't know what we don't know. And so as we learn, we just do a little bit better each time, and let's forgive ourselves for the times that we didn't know any better, the times that we're gonna not get it right in the future, and we just keep doing the best we can, learning little by little as our lives get better and better. Okay, so thank you so much for being with us today. And you can check out my website, mariebenard.com. Sign up for my mailing list there. If you enjoyed the show, please do share it. I want to send you lots of love. Up next is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Arific on CITR.
Tune in every Tuesday from 8 till 9 p.m. for Inside Out with your hosts, AJK and Zia, for exciting new dance music.
Startup is a two-day orientation event for incoming first-year art students that will give them a taste of what life is going to be like at UBC. Squads will link up and compete in a series of challenges around campus to win bragging rights. Hashtag squad goals. Your leaders are there to give you the lowdown on university life. They'll provide you with answers to your essential questions. This is going to be a
situation
that you will not want to miss.
Hashtag FOMO.
An enabled FM chip in your smartphone can make the difference in an emergency situation by allowing you to still hear critical updates. It will also let you listen to the local FM station using 3 times less battery and 20 times less data than streaming. Visit freeradioonmyphone.ca to see how you can get involved by contacting your carrier and signing our petition.
Are you interested in human rights and social justice? Come check out Amnesty International UBC. We fight to stop human rights violations all over the world, including here in Canada. Our club hosts letter writing sessions, social events, documentary nights, bar fundraisers, and current events discussions on a bi-weekly basis. So keep your ears open and check out our Amnesty International UBC Facebook page for more information. We look forward to promoting human rights with you.
Friends, well, we like you, so become a member and get a Friends of CITR card. Not only does it make you special, but it gets you all kinds of deals with our friends on Commercial Drive, like 10% off at Stormcrow Tavern, High Life Records, Audio Pile, Mintage Clothing, and more. Visit CITR.ca for more, or come check us out in the Nest.
Let me refresh your memory. Russians. That's right. Russians, Ruskies, communists, communists. Oh, now you remember.
Hello, hello, hello. My name is Russian Tim, and I'm the host of weekly punk rock radio show called Rocket from Russia. Every Tuesday, 10:30 to 11:30 a.m., Rocket from Russia is aired on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, or CITR.ca, anywhere where internet is paid for.
Every
ever wanted to take a tour of different temples and see what they are all about, interested in learning more about different religions, we'll look no further than Multicultural Ministries. They are a non-profit organization that will be hosting a temple tour right here in Vancouver on September the 24th. Learn about Islam, Sikhism, Hinduism, and Buddhism, four different fascinating religions that offer their own distinct perspectives on life and the world that we live in. Take a guided tour of the unique temples and learn how each religion prays and worships. A simple $39 payment gets you the four tours and a delicious ethnic lunch as well. For more information or to book, please visit temple tour.